Hello, panel listeners. Welcome to the Dollar Bin recording of Heroes Con 2012 panel. Happy birthday, Rocketeer. Some quick info about the Dollar Bin. We are a weekly comic book podcast running about 1 hour in which we conduct interviews with industry professionals, review current and classic books ranging from the smallest of mini comics to the highest of print runs. We have grandiose discussions, we have heated debates, we voice opinions, and sometimes we even make mistakes, we'll admit it, but most of all, we love talking comics. Well, we love talking and we love comics. The Dollar Bin can be found at www.thedollarbin.net. We are currently sponsored by Borderlands Comics and Games, www.borderlands.us, geeks welcome. And you are listening, as I said, to Heroes Con 2012 panel, Happy Birthday Rocketeer. Thank you, Dave Stevens. Take it away, guys.
Okay, we're here for the, as you guys probably know, this is the 30th anniversary of the original publication of The Rocketeer by Dave Stevens. And Stephanie is supposed to be here, too. If she shows up, we'll just work her in. But what we have assembled here, or has been assembled, is a panel of people who have been involved primarily in IDW's new Adventures of the Rocketeer. It's Rocketeer Adventures is the name of the book. Mm-hmm. There's been two series that they've done. And I'll step out of the way here in a second. My name is B. Clay Moore, and I'm a writer, and I assume I was asked to do this because a lot of my work revolves around sort of retro themes, and mm-hmm. Tony and I are working on a book that's sort of pulp inspired, set in the early 40s for DC, and obviously, you know, I assume the Rocketeer was kind of an early influence on.
Let's just talk about our book.
Yeah, so we'll open the floor to questions for us. But so I'm just kind of give you a brief overview, and you're probably all familiar with the character. But Dave created the character in the early '80s. Originally appeared as a backup story in a book called Star Slayer by Mike Grell, which was published by Pacific Comics. From there, it jumped around into a series of Pacific Presents, which I think it shared space with a Ditko story.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Ditko. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And I was very young when the book initially came out, but I do remember it was instantly sort of kind of energized people. And maybe now it seems old hat to kind of pull from the past for inspiration, but I think at the time it seemed like sort of a fresh direction when everything was a little bit stale in the mainstream. That's my perception. I remember as a kid just being blown away by it, and it was a very early sort of gateway into pop culture of the past and how to use that as an inspiration. Obviously, he was a huge fan of movie serials, King of the Rocket Men, things like this. Betty Page was a direct inspiration, obviously, and Dave's, I think, could almost single-handedly be credited with rekindling mm-hmm. her popularity. Mm-hmm. Dave passed away in 2008 from a fairly rare form of leukemia, and IDW around that time collected the complete Adventures of the Rocketeer, which, as I just discussed with Laura Martin at the end, David handpicked Laura to recolor the entire series. Mm-hmm. And that book came out in 2009, 2010?
I want to say 2010.
Right.
And when was it that you guys met and he picked you to do it?
We actually never met. We met on email. I colored a couple of his pieces for the coffee table book, like a Catwoman piece and a couple of other things. And he liked it so much, we shared emails back and forth, and he said that, you know, if and when he could ever get this Rocketeer thing going, he would really want me to color it. So that was, he never got a chance to see any of the work, though. Which is a shame.
Man.
Yeah.
Well, that's part of it, and IDW deserves a lot of credit in the past few years for not just the Rocketeer. They've presented these fantastic artists' editions of oversized, sort of original sized reprints of work, and they've mined a lot of old comic strips and things like this. But they've done well by the Rocketeer, and they've assembled, including the people on the stage, a pretty phenomenal group of talent to create new Rocketeer adventures. And I'm going to make the assumption that everyone on this panel was influenced or inspired in some way prior to being asked by the Rocketeer. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go ahead and let everyone sort of introduce themselves, talk about what they did within the Rocketeer adventures, and maybe if you could just sort of briefly discuss like the impact, you know, that Dave's work and the Rocketeer had on your thinking when you encountered it, or, you know, if you had any interaction with Dave or anything, just general thoughts on what you did and why you did it. So We'll start with Tony Harris here.
Hi, I'm Tony Harris. I'm an artist and been working in comics for 23 years. And I recently did a short story, and I think it was the first series.
Yeah.
You were in the same issue, I think, weren't you?
I don't remember.
I was in the last issue of the first series, whatever that
is. Which I was in the one before you.
Okay, that's right. I did an 8-page short, and it was written by Joe Pruitt and myself, and then he did the final story. And it centered around Cliff, you know, being at Muscle Beach in Santa Monica. And hanging out with Betty and Peavy and just having a nice chill day, and they go up on this roller coaster, and when they get up on the top of it there, he looks out and sees a Japanese sub floating around, and everything sort of unfolds from there. But it was a fantastic little gig, and I wish I could have done more. And Clay's right. Dave absolutely influenced me at a very early age. I didn't start reading comics when I was a kid like a lot of pros did, not until I was about 19. That's when I discovered the medium was a lot bigger than I thought it was, and wasn't just like some fringe magazine rack thing. And wow, people actually did this for a living, mm-hmm. and somebody has to draw that stuff. And mm-hmm. and that's when I discovered specialty shops. And this was in about 1988, and went into the shop, and the Rocketeer was some of the first stuff that I found, because mm-hmm. I wasn't really gravitating towards the mainstream stuff very much, and they had a huge indie rack with all that stuff in it and graphic novels, and that's kind of where I went, and Rocketeer just leapt right off, and I just scooped up everything I could find after that. And Dave was... It sounds cliche to kind of say it, but especially at that point, maybe not so much now because a lot of guys have been influenced by him, and then there's been so many new guys that have come onto the scene since Dave, but at that point, there was very precious little as far as like what Dave was doing. That's in my opinion anyway. Mm-hmm. He was really singular as far as like his look. Mm-hmm. Who else at that time? Him and
Michael Golden to some degree.
Michael Golden mm-hmm. to some degree, and then Bill Stout, and Russ Heath, and maybe some guys like that. But his style was few and far between at that point. So I think that's what spoke to me, because I've always been a fan of period stuff and 1940s stuff, even then. And so to see that in comics was pretty cool, especially with the medium being brand new to me. I think I count myself lucky that his stuff was some of the first stuff that I found instead of a bunch of crap.
I'm Tommy Lee Edwards, and I was able to do one of the stories in the first series. I think it's in the second or third issue, whatever. Okay. And I first discovered the Rocketeer when I was in junior high. It's like mid-80s or so, and I was really into, I mean, that I was like definitely a kid of the 80s as far as like comics, so I was really into like Mike Grell stuff and Howard Chaykin and all these, you know, guys who were doing like their own stuff. You know, I read superhero stuff as well, not as much of it for some reason, but I liked a lot of Marvel stuff, like X-Men and Spider-Man and that kind of stuff. But I liked it, even in the 80s, there was like this different stuff that I responded to. And I really liked the stuff that really got me drawing when I was little was like movies like Star Wars, then Indiana Jones. And then I loved Indiana Jones. Mm-hmm. And then that got into me liking a lot of the old pulp books, and mm-hmm. I would read a lot of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so Rocketeer was like right up my alley. This was probably 85, 86 when I first saw Rocketeer, and I think it, when did it start? 82 or
yeah,
something
like
around
82
there.
Was, 82 was, you know, 30 years ago.
So it was. There you go. So yeah, and then it was like eagerly awaiting for more, you know, and yeah. Then eventually mm-hmm. it would come, and it was exciting, and so I first met Dave in 92.
Damn you, I never met him.
Yeah, it was 92. I was 19, and I was going to Art Center in Pasadena. I went down to San Diego Comic Con, you know, back in those days, back in the olden days in 92, when the convention was all about comics and artists.
The good days.
Yeah, and you walked in. You walked in, and they're the right up front, man, was like, you know, all comics. These guys, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I got to meet a lot of guys whose work I liked at that time. Matt Wagner and Paul Chadwick, and it was all stuff that they did superhero-ish stuff, but it was all guys who like created their own stuff, and they were really authors. And Dave was one of those guys, you know. And so I remember I had not much money, and I wanted a print, and there was this really kick-ass Rocketeer poster that I wanted really badly, and my now wife Melissa, we were both at the show, and we wanted. I was like, well, either I buy that and nothing else at the show, or I buy the $20 one and I can get more stuff at the show. Mm-hmm. So I bought the $20 one, and Dave signed it for me and Melissa. And this is about 3 years before we got married, and it's still hanging in our house. You know, mm-hmm. It's just really cool. That's awesome. I wish we had the big one, but I'm glad that we have the one that we had. And Melissa, the whole time, she's like, get the big one. Who cares about anything else? You know?
No.
And I'm like, no, it's cool. And then still to this day, you know, she's like, you should have got the big one.
What'd you do with the rest of the money?
Yeah. So, the rest of the, what I spend the other, you know, $25 on or whatever, I have no, probably a hot dog. You know? But yeah, so and then I would see Dave, you know, in San Diego on the following years, and then Scott Dunbeer, who was the editor on the, mm-hmm. the book that we all did, was a fan, and he knew that mm-hmm. I was a fan, and so the mm-hmm. idea was to get guys who really were Rocketeer admirers to do the book.
Wait a minute. Were you a pro when you met him?
No, I wasn't. I mean, I was going to school. I was doing like storyboards and some stuff, but I had never done any comics.
Okay.
So, it wasn't until like a few years later that he started kind of that. You know, he would know that I was doing stuff and that, mm-hmm. but I don't think I ever really bothered to show him anything or anything. Mm-hmm. So we're all kind of fans, which is really cool. So, and then my good friend Jonathan Ross that I did Turf with. He is a big fan, and his daughter's named Betty after Betty Aww. Page. So, but
yeah, you're right.
Whatever. He's got aspirations for his daughter.
That's funny.
So yeah, basically we got to do a story that is very much in the vein of what we all really liked in the Rocketeer stories, and it was just as much about Cliff and Betty as it was even more about the time mm-hmm. and the cast of characters around them, mm-hmm. you know. So it was quite the honor. I was really glad that to be asked, and also to be that there's more Rocketeer for us to enjoy.
Mm-hmm. I know, right?
Yeah. But Jim?
Yeah. My old days were the 1930s, so it's a little different story. First of all, I want to give credit to Kelvin Mao and Dave Mandel, yes. who mm-hmm. are the two guys that shepherded the product through mm-hmm. IDW. Not that IDW did a bad job, but they handheld it from beginning to end, mm-hmm. and it was an awful lot of work, and mm-hmm. they did a marvelous job. Mm-hmm. Things that Dave wouldn't himself have done, mm-hmm. and he would walk away from it. I first saw the Rocketeer in the back of Star Slayer mm-hmm. and saw Betty Page there and got furious because I had been drawing Betty Page since 1951. And it had never occurred to me to put Betty Page in a comic. At the time, I was writing motion pictures for bad motion pictures, I should say, for Canon films. And I always wanted to do a comic, and I heard from Mike, I think it was Bill Stout, who was production designer on a Canon film, that Dave was going to stop doing The Rocketeer. Mm. So I made a drawing of Betty Page, and I put a balloon there, and I said, Dave, after all you're getting off me, you can't stop now. Love, Betty. And I had a table at Bill Stout's studio on Fairfax Boulevard. And after that, I met him, and we went to lunch, and we became best friends. It was one of those odd things, even though he was the same age as my son. But he didn't mind hanging out with old guys, so it was a good thing. He knew probably more about the 1930s than I did, even though I grew up in them. And he knew the buildings in L.A., he knew the movies, he knew the music, and he knew all the pulp heroes. Everybody know what a pulp is? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, good. That's sometimes they don't. But and that's what you see in The Rocketeer. So when Scott Dunbar, they planned the comic, he asked me to do a pinup for the first issue. Mm-hmm. But then very nervously said, but do Betty, do Dave's Betty. Don't do my own. He wanted some clothes on her. Anyway, the head you see in my piece is Dave's head from a print called Betty's Bath, mm-hmm. which is, is it Betty's Bath? No, it's the other one, the cutie one. Anyway. That's my story. I can tell you, I can talk for 5 hours about Dave, but I'll go from here.
Hi, my name is Eric Canetti. I'm normally a designer and storyboard artist for animation, so I don't know how I fell ass backwards into drawing Rocketeer for a comic book. My very first experience in Rocketeer had nothing to do with a comic book, which is a horrible thing to say. I watched the movie first. When everybody else, I think that was the summer that Terminator 2 came out, so Rocketeer mm-hmm. kind of disappeared.
Yeah, 91. Yeah.
Rocketeer really disappeared in the background. I was the only one in line for that show, and I got the fancy pin and the poster that they gave away, and whatever it was that Disney was shelling out, I was shoving it in my pockets and my backpack. Everybody was at schools talking about Terminator 2, and I was talking about this guy with a fin on his head, and it's pretty freaking awesome. He's got a rocket pack, and he knew how to fly biplanes, and that really kind of opened my mind to that. Now, here's the horrible aspect was I got really inquisitive about The Rocketeer, so that's the year I made my way to San Diego, and I found out it was created by a guy named Dave Stevens, and I thought, well, if the movie looks like this, it's going to be more certain levels of awesome. And I can speak for myself in that my brain isn't always attuned to the right frequency of what good comic books look like. So when I was younger, I didn't appreciate Dave's work. So I thought, well, if the movie looks like this and there's a comic book about it, it's got to be another level of awesome. And I got there and met Dave very briefly. I couldn't have said more than two words to him. Opened up the comic book and was, and I feel horrible saying this, but I was pretty disappointed because it wasn't the movie. Mm-hmm. So I walked away from the table not buying anything from the man, and I regretted it ever since because years later, a few of his fans who, I mean, when the flip switched in my head, or excuse me, when the switch flipped in my head that I was attuned to, wow, I really love this stuff, between this and Lovin' Rockets and Cadillacs and Dinosaurs, that's mm-hmm. when I realized, God, I had an opportunity to buy anything and everything I could from the guy. I was so ashamed not liking his work for the first time, I couldn't go back to his table again. Aww. Years this happened. Yeah. And so one of those fans found out that I didn't have it in me to go talk to him. So he goes talk to Dave, and Dave signs a little card for me that says, I'm human, you can talk to me. And I never found the courage to do it. And then he goes and passes away, and I was like, God bless America, why did you go pass away before I had a chance? So anyway, fast forward to me meeting Scott Dunbar. Dunbar said, well, here's your chance to make up for it. And Matt Wagner wrote my story, and the way Matt wrote the story was very classic, as he believed that Dave would have presented it, which is one main image and a bunch of little mm-hmm. inset panels mm-hmm. of this thing. And the concept of the story was that there's a school of kids in the far future who had turned the whole Rocketeer into part of their culture. So it's a bunch of kids flying around with backpacks on, learning about the history of where they came from as a society. Mm-hmm. And we're learning about it in about 8 pages as they saw, or at least as they were learning it, so were we. So it's shots of Cliff finding the rocket pack for the first time. Mm-hmm. And Cliff as a little kid, as he was, you know, as a, working in a circus and stealing candy, and how he built himself up into a man flying around with a backpack. The way Matt wrote it, again, was a big image and a bunch of little inset panels. And in my arrogance, I thought, I could probably do it better than that. So I thought, well, who does the, like, really nice vintage image? And I thought, well, if Drew Struzan can do it, well, so can I, yeah? Yeah, it was a horrible miscalculation on my part, because there's multiple phone calls of Scott Dunderberg going, I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah. And he says, just do it the way Matt wrote it, man. And I'm like, no. No, at this point, my arrogance and my tenacity said, no, I can't. So it took really a long time for me to come out with those pages, and I think it's in the second issue of this new Rocketeer 2 volume. Mm-hmm. It took me forever to do, but it really was because that ghost of Dave was hanging over my head going, this is what happens when you don't come talk to me. And you get a chance, you know, you get punished by spending 6 months trying to draw 8 pages or whatever you wanted to.
You still have that card?
Say again? I do. Yeah. Oh, I do, cool. Yeah. On the back, it looks like a bleached white card. It had aged in quite some time. It has his signature. And I guess the fan that gave it to me already had Dave sign it X amount of years ago.
Oh, wow.
Brought it back to Dave and said, hey, can you write a little something for my friend? So it had already aged in such a way. Huh? It had worn in such a way. And when I got it, I tucked it away where no sort of atmosphere could ever ruin it again, you know? So that's my story.
Hey, I'm Laura Martin. I had the daunting task of revisiting all of Dave's original art for the Rocketeer series and recoloring it, which not everyone loved, but I felt completely honored to do it. How I came to Rocketeer was, like Eric said, through the movie. That was my first introduction. And it was via many different tendrils of ways that I became more and more familiar with David's work. I like good girl art, so I saw a lot of his paintings and things. And I had friends who were huge art collectors, two of them being Kelvin Mao and Dave Mendel, who was mentioned earlier. And their collections, you know, opened my eyes to a lot of Dave's other work as well. And as Dave was he hadn't released a lot of stuff in a long time, and decided, you know, he knew he had leukemia. He knew he wanted to put out some work to leave a legacy behind, something that was a complete product of his work. So Kelvin and David were instrumental in putting together this coffee table book, this giant, like, Art of Dave Stevens book. And Dave had a lot of artwork that hadn't been colored or had been colored years ago, and he wanted to see refreshed. So a lot of this artwork got sent out to a bunch of different colorists, and me being one of them. And I got a chance to color 2 or 3 of his pieces. I was so starstruck and just nervous about it. I sat on them for a long time, and I did a ton of research. I looked through all of his artwork. How would he have painted this? What is his style? What is his airbrush style? You know, really sort of examined his work. And I guess in doing so, I seemed to, resonate in some way. And he really appreciated it. And he emailed me a couple of times and said he really enjoyed the work I did. And that was, you know, I was like, oh my God, Dave Stevens emailed me. Oh, I still have the emails. I'm never throwing away. So when David Mendel and Kelvin were putting together, you know, we're finally saying, let's do this Rocketeer book right. We want to collect it, and we want to, and this was Dave Stevens' preference too. He really wanted to see this stuff the way he had really wanted to see it colored. Because, you know, back in the mid-'80s, late-'80s, there was no digital coloring to speak of, and painted work was very hard to produce on a timely basis. So the coloring was limited by the process. And even though they had some amazing colorists on it, one of whom being Joe Chido, who I'll mention in a minute, and Steve Olaf, these guys are masters in the industry. They colored a lot of the original work. It still was limited by the print techniques of the time. So that's why they wanted this stuff rescanned, all of the scans rescanned from the original artwork as much as possible. There were a few pages that were missing. But all of that revisited digitally the way now that can be done quickly in a painterly fashion that Dave could have done had he, you know, been able to. So, yeah, that was the ginormous project that took up an entire year. And, of course, before I ever got page one of it, Dave passed away. But the nice thing was that because Kelvin and David Mandel worked so closely with him and were such good friends with him, they really were. They, like you said, they were absolutely instrumental in putting together the book that Dave would be proud of. And everything they did, every step of the way, was a decision made with Dave in mind. Every time I finished a page, I would send it to them and say, "Is this what you think Dave would want?" And they said, "Yes. You know, this is how he would approach it. This is what he would tell you if he was sitting here." So even though I never got the feedback from Dave Stevens. His hand was very heavily into everything. So that was an amazing, amazing honor to be able to do, and I hope it turned out okay.
In the introduction, I neglected to address the Rocketeer movie, which I should have mentioned, which, as was said, came out in 1991. Mm-hmm. And as I understand, I think Dave co-wrote the screenplay mm-hmm. for the movie, and he was pretty heavily involved as a mm-hmm. producer. And I remember seeing the movie too. But I was, you know, as a kid, I'd been such a fan of this stuff that I was like not disappointed at all in the mm-hmm. movie at the
yeah,
time.
Yeah, I was like that too. Even as
I loved it.
Yeah, so I guess it's no surprise it didn't set the box office on fire because I don't, you know, Terminator 2.
Yeah.
Even then, I didn't have any real interest in. But I think I've always heard that like I don't think Dave had a problem with the movie, but I think he was disappointed in the way the movie had been marketed and
yeah.
handled, and it was never given a fair chance.
Right.
But no, I mean, it was an early example of, it's just amazing to me that how well they did translate mm-hmm. some of that stuff to the screen. Mm-hmm. I mean, even at that age.
I have that poster you mentioned, the Disney one, the illustrated one.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I have it hanging yeah, up yeah. in my
it's
studio.
It's like an iconic
yeah.
image at
yeah.
that point.
Well, so much so that when I got a chance to do, you know, Iron Man Enter the Mandarin,
yes.
I
yes.
straight
yes.
stole that poster yes. as an homage and a tip of the hat. You know, yeah. everybody calls me out on it, and it's, yeah,
yeah.
no
yeah.
shit.
yeah. yeah. But I think that was an early example. I mean, even at the, you know, when I saw it at that age, I just remember thinking, I'm just shocked that this looks like, you know, it's the actual sure. character and everything, you know,
yeah.
and whoever I went with was probably like, shut
yeah,
up.
I was mm-hmm. totally impressed with all the flying sequences were just,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
God, I was so mm-hmm. blown away by that stuff.
Mm-hmm. They made a good choice with Joe Johnston. I thought, you know, Joe Johnston making that movie was a good choice. That was I mean,
the casting for Cliff was incredible.
Yeah, it was perfect. Yeah. yeah.
Another thing I skipped over was when you mentioned the movie. It reminded me that was the first movie that my wife and I had ever seen together.
Aww.
And before we were dating, we went to high school together and stuff.
Right.
And we went to the movie. We would and I was like, I'm gonna go see The Rocketeer. Oh, what's that? Oh, this comic I love. Blah blah blah.
Yeah.
And we always would draw and paint and hang out together. And I convinced her to go to the movie. And we met at the movies. It was awesome. We loved it. All right, see you later. You know. And we would just hang out all the time. It wasn't until years after high school that we started dating. But
cool.
but The Rocketeer was the first time the two of us ever hung out, the two of us.
Aww.
And it was sort of the beginning of a friendship.
Aww.
I mean, even though we were in class together and all that, but kind of just, and then.
So that's why the poster
and
is.
Then, yeah, aww. And that's why not, yeah. So
that's
the,
cool.
So then you know, a couple years later, meeting Dave and
yeah.
all that. So
sure.
The Rocketeer is kind of a big part of you know, 17 years of being
up.
With the same girl, yeah.
Yeah, aww. Unless he did make it up, because we don't really know.
Yeah.
I did totally make that shit up.
another thing that I just wanted to say briefly that Tommy kind of mentioned is that the early and mid 80s were this weird boom in. It was sort of the first time there was this real interest in sort of creator owned comics, mm-hmm. Pacific and Eclipse, and these people were. Mm-hmm. sort of attempting to provide an alternative. And in retrospect, there was some pretty great work done in that time.
Mm-hmm.
There was some garbage done, too. Eventually, I think that's what happened. The black and white boom, and there was sort of an implosion. And for a while, it kind of lay dormant.
Yeah.
Scout
was awesome.
Truman
yeah.
was, that was
Tim
bad
Truman.
Ass.
Yeah. But I think that some of the new wave of people kind of investing themselves in their own stuff are people like us who at a young age were exposed to that stuff, and then when it kind of went away for a while,
like,
I think
hey.
The door's always been there, and you know, so I think there's probably sort of unspoken, but I think there's more influence on what people are doing now with just what those guys were doing at the time.
Yeah, I think I go back to that a lot. Like when I was going to college in illustration and film, I was like kind of left my interest in comics behind me because it was, you know, into the 90s, yeah. and I was oh, you know, I just don't see a place for me as someone to make comics in this marketplace. And then I would just, you know, but by meeting and becoming friends with a lot of the guys who were doing that stuff in the 80s, they rekindled my my interest in wanting to make that stuff.
Yeah. So, Jim, you mentioned that you'd been drawing Betty Page since the early 50s. Would you mind sort of elaborating on, like, where you encountered her, how she inspired you, and then maybe was that something that blew Dave away, you know, that you had been in you know?
It came directly from doing it for Dave. The first comic I did was Spicy Adventure, which came out after Rascals in Paradise.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I did the drawings for it. He was going to put out Betty Page comics on his own.
Uh-huh.
And he'd done that Jungle cover.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I did a 20-page story. I didn't know he was looking for 8 pages. You know? And it still hadn't ended. So he wrote the ending for the 20 pages. And then people, you know, Betty took off. Nobody thought that it was going to be the phenomenon that it was. And at the same time, I was doing, as an act of love, Betty Page, Queen of Hearts, a book about Betty, which was also, you know, it's just a long shot to do Betty. And I don't know, I still sell that book.
Yeah.
It's just, it's crazy that it's been in print about 14, 15 years.
Wow.
Over that now.
And Dave eventually interacted with Betty. Dave eventually got to know Betty and interacted
with
her a little bit.
Yeah, she had vanished. And in the late 50s, early 60s, she had vanished.
Mm-hmm.
She had gone to Florida, then disappeared, and there were all kinds of rumors. She's living with a duke in England, and she's become a Christian and gone to Africa or something. And
or all of that.
It was all kinds of stuff. And when I started the book, we didn't know where Betty was. And then she appeared, and they did her on Rich and Famous in Shadow and so forth. And then Dave met her. She got a lawyer, a bad one, unfortunately. And they did a couple glamour cons were based on Betty in the early days. But Dave met her and started to take care of her. You know, he'd call me up, and he says, "I'm carrying 50-pound sacks of bird seed for Betty." That's right, because she loved to feed the birds around where she lived and so forth.
Yeah.
And then when the book came out, he had Betty call me and say, you know, it was pretty funny, because it's a deep, low voice with a southern accent. I guess it's a Tennessee accent, I'm not sure, but I said, "Come on, who is this?" No one putting me on. And she said, no, it's Betty," and so forth. And but she thanked me for that. He says, "But you make me look mean."
And,
she forgot all the stuff that she did with the bondage and everything. But, you know, I don't think she ever understood quite the phenomenon.
Yeah.
You know, was a little bit beyond her. It's beyond me. I don't know. It just keeps going. It's the it's young people that come up to me now and like the books. The first book I did featured the photographs of Bunny Yeager, a terrific woman photographer in Florida, and gorgeous shots of her. And the second book, I didn't know what to do, but I found a collection of amateur photos that hadn't been published, and they're
like
really
camera club?
Funky.
Sort of like
really
camera club photos?
She did most of her career was amateur photography.
Yeah. Wow.
And, you know, most of those guys just wanted to see her naked. Right. That was all that was really about. And she didn't care. But the young girls come up. She's, you know, she's posing on in a motel, on the dining room table, you know, on the carpet in the living room, all kinds of funky stuff. And she looks great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they love that rebellion, you know, that unconscious rebellion, I guess, and so forth.
Yeah.
But I don't know that she ever thought about it. She just did it. She no pretensions whatsoever.
Yeah.
And
well,
Dave loved that.
Go ahead.
Took care of several old starlets really? And so forth. He knew all the girls I'd photographed, Anna Capri and Jeanette Comer, and he would go through my files and because they got discarded.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he did a painting called, oh God, I forget her real name, but it's called AKA The Black Dahlia.
Oh, yes.
And it's an incredible portrait painting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's just a terrific portrait of a girl who, God, I can't remember her name. See, I still think of her as a Black Dahlia, but a real
Elizabeth
girl
Smart.
Elizabeth
got butchered.
Elizabeth
Smart, wasn't
Elizabeth,
it?
Yeah,
no, it
wasn't
Smart.
Smart, yes.
Was it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Smart. And but he had a real affection for those millions of young ladies that get discarded. And mm-hmm. it's not a sexual thing. It was a real affection. The sex was something else. I saw him through many love affairs. and many houses. There's those stories you can tell about Dave and real estate that go on forever. Yeah. They're all pretty funny. We used to plan what I was going to say at his funeral. I mean, it sounds kind of dark, but we had lunch every week for mm-hmm. years, mm-hmm. you know. So, but then he wouldn't say, you can't tell him that story. You can't. And went on and on like that. Yeah. Am I any more?
No, that's no. I just since you interacted with him so much and connected with the era in which he was fascinated.
On the film, I liked the film, but I wanted to see the comic book.
Mm-hmm.
And he was working on it. He had the two young guys writing it. I forget their names. Mm-hmm. But I said one thing: just don't let him save the world. You know? He said, "Too late. We're going after." And that was Disney.
Yeah.
And I wanted raggedy ass, you know, everyday guy dealing with his girlfriend and airplanes.
Sure.
And, keep it down like that and make it a human, completely human story, mm-hmm. and which is what the comic book is brilliantly written.
Sure,
exactly.
Yeah, he said, "I'm not a writer." I said, "Nevertheless, it's brilliant the stuff you've done with these characters. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all distinctive, unique characters, mm-hmm. and not just the drawing, but it's the dialogue, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. They're real people, and that I loved seeing that in the comic book."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you? I gotta say one thing. My favorite thing about the Rocketeer, even more than the actual jetpack, is how he came up with the notion of what that damn helmet was made from.
Yeah.
I mean, is that not the most brilliant? It was a radio.
Yeah.
That's just the coolest idea. Yeah. And I think that's why a lot of fans, I think, sort of identify with the character so much, is because Cliff just and Peavy just like, well, specifically Peavy, just they made everything out of what they had around the shop and in the house, and it was like, wow, that's like if I just decided I was going to become a superhero, I just
put a radio
made
on
my
it.
Own costume out of junk. So I had to say that.
That's cool.
Did you guys as you drew the new stuff? Did you go back and look at new stuff?
If for no other reason to make sure that I wasn't like ripping him off or something, mm-hmm. you know, and to say, okay, this is like the source material. I'm going to go way over here. And you know,
did you find? I don't know. I mean, when you look at something at one point and you look at something at another point, like Tommy, now that you've been drawing for years. Looking at Dave's stuff again, did you see something? And you know, I mean, was there inspiration? I mean, it's
I think especially when now we have these nice books out where mm-hmm. you can really appreciate this stuff and all together. Like I have, all the Pacific Comic versions and stuff, and mm-hmm. on all in newsprint and everything, and they're fine. And I have a fondness for them for mm-hmm. nostalgic reasons. But whenever I pull out the stuff now I've got the artist edition and all this mm-hmm. stuff. So, but that wasn't quite out when I was working on my story. But I had the newly colored, mm-hmm. Collection, and I had drawn the Rocketeer only a few times just for fun, or but I never really made sure I nailed it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this time was like I looked at it closer than I ever had.
Yeah.
To make sure I understood the jetpack and understood, you know, exactly
how particular.
You think you know it, and like, oh yeah, I can draw that, and then I was like, wait, how's this word
change? It does change.
So it's like kind
of
had to.
But isn't that typical of any of us?
Totally.
It's like, even if it's not company owned work, but your own creation, if it's a jetpack or whatever you've designed, if you have to draw it over the course of 40, 50, 60 pages, your own work is going to, you know, I mean, my colorist has like busted my ass about a thousand times calling me up going, hey, jackass, the button's on the other side.
Well, look at, I mean, like I had to draw, when I had to draw Galactus for the first time, you go back and you look at the first Galactus stuff from Jack Kirby and I'm like, wait, he looks completely different.
Like short pants and long,
So you kind of have to just decide, okay, that's the one that I think of as Galactus or Rocketeer.
One of my executive producers who was working with me as I was drawing the Rocketeer pages, I have a scene where Cliff lifts up the backpack for the first time. And he's one of these old school guys, and his name is Glenn Murakami. He's produced a ton of stuff for Warner Brothers. And I have him lifting up the backpack, and he says, where's the fins? And I said, shut up, there's no fins. You know, and I go back again, I'm like, oh yeah, my God, there's fins on this thing. Is it, at one point, he goes, yeah, there's a jewel on the back, and there, depending on how you look at it, it can be a jewel or a vent. I go, there's no jewel, and you go back again.
Yeah. Like,
there's a jewel on the back.
You know, I always felt like that was like a piece of colored glass or something, so you could see how much liquid was in
the sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could be whatever you wanted to.
It was a rabbit.
No, he'd refer it to it as you put the ruby gas cap on it.
Yeah.
There's no ruby gas cap.
Yeah.
You know, it really does range. It's some, in some shots, there's a plank on his back before the rocket is attached to.
Yes.
And in some, there isn't. Yeah. So I thought, God, am I...
I didn't do the plank.
No, I didn't either. Mm-hmm. I didn't either. I kind of came up with a hybrid between the movie backpack and the one that...
I did this thing where I put like these little... I don't know if Dave, I can't remember if Dave did it or
not. Shields over his butt?
Over his ass cheeks.
Yeah.
So you burn him up. And I just felt compelled to draw those on. Boy, he's going to get a rash or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the practicality.
Yeah.
And also, another buzzsaw that I ran into is that, I mean, it's the way Dave drew so meticulously, but I don't have the patience for, are the buttons.
He drew so many on the jacket, the rivets on the metal.
Exactly. How many times did all of us count those damn buttons?
I think every time I was
like, oh God, I gotta go back and look at the Pacific Comics.
Right.
But he never got it wrong. He never got it wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I drew 10, if you're curious, because I had to cut off like button.
Did you do 10 buttons?
I can only draw 10 buttons, that's it. I love you, Dave Stevens, but I'm not going to draw 30 buttons on this jacket.
It was tempting to not put them across the top, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because you wanted them to stop here,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah, because typically those sort of shield...
It came over, and then
it was like these were ornamental, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, he had that jacket.
Did he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the job course, all of it was made. Yeah.
You know what? The shoulder pads.
Yeah.
Okay, that those were the things that came and went.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went without them, but then I was like not sure which.
Yeah.
I went without them because I thought, I see Cliff is like, well, maybe. He just grabbed the jacket. He didn't have it specially made, so Cliff just had what he had laying around.
Very slight guy.
So true.
Glorified himself.
Yeah, he had to do it.
Does anybody out there have any questions or comments or anything that they? Where is it?
Why? A new movie?
Hell yeah.
Maybe, but it's. I think that was a really nice way to capture.
Yeah, even though it's not the comic, the spirit of it, I think
I would really see that particular story redone. I mean, I'd like to see a new Rocketeer adventure.
Oh, sure, Rocketeer.
In that same
I'd like to see, there are a lot of other pulp heroes that I would like to see done today, you know, that would be, you know, the pulp heroes that, that Dave was influenced by. Right. I'd like to see some of that stuff come. I mean, like, they've tried and failed with some, like the Shadow, you know, it was like the worst.
Doc Savage mini time.
Are they?
They're redoing the Shadow, yeah.
I'll believe it when I see it, but it'll probably suck anyway.
So I'm glad that's what you want to see, Tommy.
You poo-poo every movie that comes out on the internet.
No, I don't.
I actually think The Rock 2 would make a pretty awesome, like, cable TV series, personally. Because you could actually do it on a decent budget.
Would you really? Yeah.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, you can.
I guess if they could do Battlestar Galactica, they could do that.
Exactly.
And you can, I mean, because it's an homage to cheap entertainment.
Right.
So I think you could pull it off.
So you do it just like that.
Because I think
I think you should do it all on wires and... Yeah. model guy, a model going across.
Yeah, exactly.
All practical effects.
Yeah. All in camera. Yeah.
The fireball jetpack.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, because if you ever get a chance to track down the original King of the Rocket Men movie serial where the guy had the big can on his head.
It's pretty obvious.
Yeah. Well, then he cut and it lands.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No exhaust or smoke or anything.
Because he'd really set everything around him on fire when he landed.
What was that? Yeah. But I guess that was the sound of Jeff.
And then the fire that comes out the back of the jet
goes up.
Yeah, right? It goes like a Flash Gordon, you know, just the smoke goes up as it's flying through space. This is awestruck.
Yeah.
But I think it goes to Jim's point about saving the world. I think he would work better in smaller stories that aren't so.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. Sure. I don't know. That's maybe I'll.
I don't know who would do that. About the Rocketeer was that he wasn't this like, you know, seasoned veteran and schooled in kung fu techniques.
Right.
And,
right.
Yeah, he got his butt kicked.
He didn't know what the hell he was.
He like tripped over things. And
See, that's the thing that I was telling you guys earlier in the introduction, that's the thing that turned me off at first, because
really?
I wanted
you
that.
Wanted the
I wanted the big
right.
stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then later on, that frequency switch where you go, oh, no, I want the guy that made a helmet with a bucket, you know, and accidentally found everything, including that backpack.
Yeah.
That felt better to me because
his temper gets angry. Yeah.
Well, I hope it's obvious to anybody that's read Ex Machina that's sort of my love letter to Dave, specifically The Great Machine, because it's just like The Rocketeer, you know, Mitchell built his jetpack and put his costume together with just stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Crap he could get at the Army-Navy store and, you know, just cobbled together the jetpack, and he constantly got his ass whipped and crashed all the time trying to fly the jetpack. So,
yeah, I think that had an influence on the way I think about the stuff I've done on my own. The first book I did on my own was a book called Hawaiian Dick, and it was very much influenced by Rockford Files. Was a big influence in this regard. It's sort of, this guy just can't get out of his own way, and whatever his intentions are, that's never what ends up happening.
Yeah.
And Rocketeer was kind of, as a kid, the first time, you know, you see him, you know, plow into the ground or whatever and screw all this stuff up. It was way more interesting than a guy who can fly around the sun or whatever, and to me.
And that was an aspect of the film I think they got right.
Yeah.
They really got that right, that first flight that he did.
Yeah.
They really nailed that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then I was like, wow, he masters this like a couple days. Yeah. I mean, that's just the way the movies work. And you got this much time. All right, let's have a training montage. And
you can just do a 2-hour film of him flying into hills and stuff.
Yeah.
Coming next summer,
the idea of a series would be really cool.
Yeah, you could build on that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I think that's a problem sometimes is when we take these. And I don't mean to denigrate the entertainment. I mean it's well done homage to what was cheap stuff. But sometimes I think we lose sight of things when we try to blow them into these big grander concepts. And I do think the movie did a good job of avoiding that particular pitfall for the most part.
Well, it was nice that you had Joe Johnston directing it, because who's an artist, you know, who could draw, and he did that jetpack, you know, design for the movie, and he was very practical.
Oh, he did? Okay.
So he's very he thought about he'd need a shield here to save his ass from burning off. He'd need,
he had the rudders
they would almost do so. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he comes from, you know, I mean, when he designed all the spaceships in Star Wars, he had to figure out how, even though they're completely unrealistic, how sort of would they work.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Does anybody else have any comments or back?
You'd be the only one that could answer that question.
Do you know any, Jim, or was there anything that maybe Dave saw in the movie that he went, oh, that image like reminds me of, you know, really feels like the book I drew, you know?
I think it was the spirit of the thing. The end of the movie when they talk about flying.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah, sure.
They had wiped him out every time he saw that.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. But
yeah, that was great.
Well, that's great to hear, too, that he felt that the film was a pretty, you know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. he was happy with it, and he worked on it. You know, writers are traditionally left out of
right, absolutely.
Motion picture production. They don't want you anywhere near it. And it's, you know, it's how you work by yourself before the movie's made, mm-hmm. and it's all by yourself. And so, and they are a team that make the movie, mm-hmm. and you're the idiot who wrote the script.
Right. Yeah.
And they didn't want him around, but he managed to.
Yeah, that's...
Joe Johnson helped him, and so forth. And he painted signs, he did all kinds
that's
of
awesome.
Stuff.
That's
on
very
that.
Cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And you see little things in the film that are all hand done by Dave.
Oh, wow.
The sides of the the hangars and the things like
that's
that.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome.
I didn't know that.
And
that's very cool.
For months doing that. Yeah.
Is that public knowledge? Is that
I don't, it should
I
be.
I don't think so, yeah.
Did anybody else hear that?
I did not know that.
Wow.
Yeah,
he was working on the sets, yeah. Wow.
I lived in Cambria. He came up. He was up. They had a location in Santa Maria, and he was over there painting hangars and signs and parking signs.
Wow.
He wanted it to be right.
Yeah.
You know? And he got along with the art department.
That's terrific.
It's very cool.
I'm going to tell that story about 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Anytime you're talking to Hollywood, well, here's what happened. Of course, then they'll show you the box office receipts and tell you to go to Hollywood. Yeah, he did have a cameo in the movie, too.
Pardon me?
He had a cameo in the movie, too. I think he did. I think
did he
played... Yeah.
He's in there someplace. Right?
Blew up or something, didn't he?
I forgot about that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Really, that's awesome. I mean, as a guy who's screwed around with Hollywood more times than, you know, and never had really great experiences, I'm sure he would have loved the movie to be this huge success, but I'd probably rather have it happen the way it did and reflect what his vision was than someone take it away from him and turn it into a blockbuster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. The values that he cherished, a lot of them are in there.
That's terrific.
It's nice that happened.
Yeah.
I personally want to thank you for sharing that stuff.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, Dave was a dedicated craftsman.
He
always laughed at it, you know, that's comic, so. and then he'd go to work on it, like, you know, it was the friggin' Mona Lisa, you know. And he get himself in holes time after time after time. He'd do a portrait of Brigitte Bardot for a commission. And then he'd put a motorcycle in it with all the machinery.
Yes.
And he couldn't get the Bardot likeness. I kept sending him photographs of a huge file on Brigitte Bardot. But then he'd be rendering that friggin' machinery for months, you know, he did that. He had a new project. I forget what the name of the girl was. Mm-hmm. But it takes place in Paris among all the Gothic churches.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
Wow. And he'd worked in Paris for a while, and he photographed all those old churches. Mm-hmm. And he's got one shot of her coming out of a tunnel. And it's this funny-looking girl, actually, who's a great USA champion muscle builder.
Yes. You know, oh, yes, I remember
this
stuff,
and she's a terrific gal, but she's kind of ugly-looking, but he liked the way she looked. But then behind her must be 500, 600, 700 skulls.
Yes, uh-huh.
And he rendered every
single
one of those skulls and tried to make them look different. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just... months upon months and months just doing skulls, you know.
I think our wives
a great image. It's a great image, but that's,
I just like the notion that he treated the Bardot piece like it was a motorcycle commission that happened to have Bridget Bardot.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. stick. Anybody else have any comments or questions or anything about from the group? Anybody else have any? Any?
Here we got one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I remember growing up.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that had. I'm surprised, kind of, that it had the impact on me as a kid that it did, because it was so far afield from what, you know, was popular.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, his production was so sporadic that, like Pacific. I remember he did like some Alien Worlds covers and something, and I would buy. And this is about the only guy I can say this for. I would buy every book that I found that had his cover art on it because it just seemed like he was so different from anything else. It was like a special thing, you know. I mean, it was like, and I would hope that he would do interiors, and he might have done a few things. But man, if it had a Dave Stevens cover, I was, you know, that was enough for me, which was pretty rare for me at that age. But
he did a lot of good covers for Eclipse.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I thank God. But the only reason he did those is he wanted to buy back the Rocketeer.
Oh, really?
And that was the condition.
I see.
He had to do all those covers for him.
Okay.
Wow.
And that's why, because he published it with Pacific, and then Comico, then Eclipse, and then Dark Horse.
Yeah.
I always assumed he owned it.
Got it back, you know. And but Eclipse, they ran a hard bargain. But he did this great covers.
Yeah.
Well, I think I probably picked up Rascals in Paradise because it reminded, you know, because I was not well versed in the history of, you know, say pinup art or the, you know, or glamour art or whatever, and I'm sure that I probably first picked that up because it reminded, you know, it was in the same sort of vein. Not really oversized edition.
Dave mentored me on that. He went over every friggin' page of the first issue and said, "You got to do this, you got to do that, you got to." I make notes, and, you know, and it was kind of a reverse. The old guy's getting mentored by the young guy, you know, but I had never done comics, and. The first ones I did were in pencil and then watercolor.
Wow.
And he took me to, we went to lunch with Mike Richardson at San Diego Con. Dave went with me, and we showed it to Mike, and Mike said, "Well, I'll publish anything you do." And then Mike went to get something, and Dave said, "You gotta put some blacks in there."
Never done. Well, and the fact that there were a lot of really hot women in it probably had something to do with picking up when I did too, but it was well done. So
funny.
Well, I guess we're probably just about out of time. Does anybody else have anything else that did any questions or comments? Anybody up here have any final? Go ahead, right here. Sir.
Right.
Yeah.
The design of the character.
Listen,
the,
anything with jack boots and jodhpurs and leather and pouches and belts is like kick ass.
Yeah.
No, that stuff never gets old.
Yeah.
The helmet, the helmet is what really makes the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I mean, he could be wearing a business suit. You put the helmet on, and it's the Rocketeer.
I actually got angry at Daft Punk once because that guy with the gold helmet, the one that has the face shield that comes all the way down, before I knew anything about Daft Punk, I thought, those sons of bitches stole that Rocketeer helmet. They really didn't, but that's the impression that it left on me. Is that it's a great bit of iconography, and it's exactly like Tommy says. You put that, it's fantastic to draw because, in my opinion, in any angle.
It's hard. It's hard. Yeah. I found it hard to draw, too, at first. It took a while to get it.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm.
This bit was really hard for me. It was the under bit here.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And like if I hit like
different angles,
you had to get that chin strap.
Yeah, it's a great bit of iconography. You can see the silhouette of it, and you'll know exactly what it is right away.
Well, and it's one of those costumes that's immediately familiar the first time you see it, even if you've never seen it before. But it's still, you know, unique, which I think is kind of,
it's not technically a costume; it's found objects.
Right. But I mean, you know, you recognize it immediately as, you know, an homage to whatever, but it's so singular and unique on its own, which is a balance that's really hard to strike, you know. So, and I think actually somebody mentioned Raiders of the Lost. You mentioned Raiders of the Lost Ark. Now that I think about it, that's probably why a whole lot of kids dug the Rocketeer immediately, because it was like right on the heels, and it was like, I'm sure those two things probably had as much to do with my becoming obsessed about the 30s and 40s and pop culture as anything.
And then what you do is then you see, wow, this is the stuff that influenced them right. to make this comic or mm-hmm. that film or whatever, and then you go back and then
right.
you,
yeah, you go back to the history.
Go right. back and actually read the stuff that was written at the time, and, mm-hmm. you yeah. know, and then mm-hmm. And find something new in it. I mean, even like stuff like I just now started reading what's his name? Howard, the Conan writer? Yeah.
Robert Howard. Mm-hmm.
Robert E. Howard. Like, I never read any of that until just recently, mm-hmm. you know, because you think of, oh, yeah, I've seen the movies and whatever and all that, right?
Sure, sure.
And I'm just discovering this whole world of stuff that I'm yeah. just loving.
It's out
like,
there, yeah.
yeah. And so, yeah, just, I think, follow Dave's example and go back and look at as much of that stuff as possible, because it's just as new and fresh or fresher yeah. than anything that we ever could do today.
Yeah.
That's probably the kind of stuff that inspires people to do what we do, because I think a lot of kids would think Indiana Jones is cool, Rocketeer is cool, and move on with their lives. But
yeah. Yeah,
like many of us, I'm sure, I know I was like, just like you say, I had to know
yeah.
the
yeah.
origins of this stuff. And, you know, I just
and
couldn't.
And it's good for kids to get interested in history, you know,
yeah.
and, you know, it's great, you know. Yeah. So
great stuff.
Yeah, I mean, half the time I spend working on, like, the story that we're doing is set in the 30s and 40s. Before I could even draw a single page of that stuff, I spent months
yeah.
just immersing yourself in
going
it.
Through books yeah. and, mm-hmm. and doing research, and not just looking at pictures, but reading
yeah.
and
yeah.
and finding out what light switches look like in yeah. in houses. The older push buttons. And,
yeah. yeah.
And then I remember the one specific thing was a lot of it takes place in this Swiss village in
I never thought about that you would have to research what electricity was like in Swiss villages.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter, man. Just make it up.
1940 in Switzerland is where he set the story. And I remember specifically going, Jesus Christ, what the heck? Where the hell are the power lines? How did they get electricity up to these really remote villages? Wait, do they have electricity?
Yeah.
Okay, if they have electricity, what do the light switches look like? And then I ended up like a week and a half later off on all these tangents that were absolutely necessary because the story is set in all these different locations within this small village. You don't think about that stuff, yeah. but that's what's yeah. amazing about having a love for that yeah. period stuff. That's what the fun to me
that's
is,
my
is
favorite
the research.
Part. Yeah. yeah. After that, yeah. it's just labor, and I get bored.
I did.
Is the research is the fun part? You know?
Hawaiian Dick is set in Honolulu in 1953, and the artist and I, who was in Australia, spent 2 hours trying to figure out what mailboxes looked like because there's a gag in the first issue where a guy runs into a mailbox, and
oh
we finally found this picture of an outdoor market from 1953, and you can see like an actual U.S. mailbox in the
oh,
picture,
wow.
and of course. Nobody's going to call us on this
yeah.
if we don't
yeah,
get it exactly right. But we can always point to it and say, you know what? That is
That's
what a
authentic.
Mailbox looked like in 1953 in Hollywood. You know?
Yeah, I did there was a flashback sequence when the two main characters were kids, and it was like in the 20s?
Early 30s.
And it's in London. And I already knew what double-decker buses in the 40s looked like. But mm-hmm. So I had to find out what the hell specific...
Yeah, of course.
1930s double decker buses.
Not that,
like,
not that there was a double decker bus in the script, mind you. He just wanted to draw a double decker bus.
they were totally. Well, you said street scene. And then,
so, I've got to find something obscure to reference
so
to put in this picture.
I literally spent 3 days trying to figure out the exact model numbers.
Oh my gosh!
And so I could get the right photographs, and then you had to. They were literally moving billboards
yeah.
at that point.
Yeah.
So you had to figure out what kind of products they
True,
were
yeah.
advertising. And I spent days God. Doing that, and I never even drew the damn thing. But I got it.
I'll tell you what, the second story arc is going to be all about buses
That's
from
right.
the 30s.
Buses and moving billboards.
Right.
This is the crap that right now our wives are downstairs bitching about. Right
yeah, why don't you just draw the damn
oh, yeah.
pages?
Yeah.
Yeah, Stacy said to me when I started Skull, she was like, "Is there a way you could like do this one like faster than you did?"
Yeah.
You put less detail in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
I
hard
thought
to explain.
You were going to do this simpler. Yeah.
It's hard to explain to your wife that looking at like a website for 30 minutes is work. You
yeah.
know, especially
yeah. Yeah.
just looking over your shoulder and it's like, trust me, this is necessary.
Yeah, I'm working. If I could bleed out of my eyes, I would. But I'm enjoying my work. I'm sorry.
That's right. Yeah, maybe it is fun. Leave me alone.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Is that it? Thanks, guys.
Yeah, we're out of time.
Thanks so much, guys.